After the election of November 1932, E.R. worried that her talents would not be used, that she would become a shut-in, a congenial hostess in the political shadows, politically sidelined. In the months before FDR's inauguration on 4 March 1933, newspaper headlines broadcast the victories of fascism and tyranny in Europe and Asia, as well as the intensifying agonies of America's worst economic depression. In that bitter climate, E.R. faced her return to Washington with a burst of activity that defied her sense of dread. Officially limited to social tasks, she felt at first burdened and defiant. Her great friend Lorena Hickok was so impressed by E.R.'s initial distress that she titled her subsequent biography Eleanor Roosevelt, Reluctant First Lady. E.R. wanted above all to be a player on the political team that worked to match FDR's campaign promises with significant deeds. To counter her fear that she would instead be forced into a life of political confinement somewhere in the shadows, a prisoner to the presidency, she plunged into the political fray. With the women activists of the Democratic Party, E.R. spent hours preparing lists of notable candidates for every level of government work. She wrote columns, stunned radio audiences, created endless controversy. The first lady-elect was in the news almost every day, upsetting the complacent, encouraging people to imagine new liberal efforts to confront the Depression, which since October 1929 had plunged 15 million unemployed and destitute Americans into despair. It had been 12 years since E.R.'s last sojourn in Washington, that small, ungenerous town that had been for her filled with ragged memories. There as a child, when her uncle Theodore was president, she had felt shy, lonely, outcast. There as a young matron, when her husband was Woodrow Wilson's assistant secretary of the Navy, she had felt humiliated, isolated, betrayed by her husband's affair with Lucy Mercer, her friend and social secretary. She had suffered the loneliest time of her adult life. She returned to that place that fed on gossip and power, a changed woman. Surrounded by loyal friends, she was devoted to her work and felt secure in her life. During the 1920s, the Roosevelts had reconsecrated their partnership and created their own political bases. FDR refortified his polio-ravaged body, and E.R. repaired her heart. They both moved beyond the affair that had threatened their marriage. While Eleanor and Franklin rebuilt their private lives, the world they had grown up in, the world they knew, disintegrated. The punitive Treaty of Versailles, which ended World War I and redrew the map of Europe, in addition to war debts and dizzying inflation, inflamed German nationalism and spurred popular movements dedicated to the demise of old ruling classes. Fascism and communism took hold as monarchies dissolved, empires collapsed, capitalism wobbled. While uncollected political and economic debts left over from the World War haunted and poisoned international relations, the wounds of Eleanor Roosevelt's earlier time in Washington marked her memories and influenced her path. After 1920, E.R. had carefully crafted a life that suited her needs. Like her uncle Theodore, she was an activist, delighted to be on the move, among people, dealing directly with causes and crises. Never idle, she enjoyed many careers and was all in a day teacher, editor, columnist, and radio commentator. Her primary circle included her business and living partners Nancy Cook, Marion Dickerman, and Caroline O'Day. With Cook and Dickerman, E.R. shared a home 2 miles from the Big House at Hyde Park, along a small river called the Valkill. With O'Day, they co-owned the Todhunter School, the Valkill Crafts Factory, and the Women's Democratic News, WDN, a monthly newsletter.